Welcome to the 9th episode of the Frontend Greatness Podcast. I'm your host, AP Koponen. This episode is sponsored by Supermetrics. Supermetrics is a diverse community of curious minds and data geeks excited to build the best business data solution ever. Supermetrics builds products used by 400,000 people worldwide in small and big companies alike. Some of their more well-known customers include the BBC, Dyson, and Warner Bros. Supermetrics was founded in 2013 as a result of one data geek's will to win a Google t-shirt. They have been profitable and growing ever since. Since the company is growing, they're also hiring. Now Supermetrics is looking for multiple senior React developers to help them make their UIs even better. You can work in these positions anywhere in Finland, Lithuania, Denmark, Poland, Portugal, the USA, or Canada. Supermetrics also has wonderful offices in Helsinki, Finland, and Vilnius, Lithuania, if working from the office is your jam. I work at Supermetrics and would be very happy if someone listening to this podcast would join the company and help us build great UIs. We're continually building new features and improving both our user experience and our technological stack. For example, we just rolled out the first version of our design system and use libraries like Next.js, React Query, and Jest with the testing library and Puppeteer. Most of our code is written in TypeScript and we automate things using CI/CD. You don't need to be an expert in TypeScript or the libraries we're using to get the job. Solid JavaScript and React skills together with the willingness to learn is enough. We can teach and learn the rest together. Please do check the job ad from the show notes and feel free to DM me on Twitter or LinkedIn if you have questions about the job or the company. I'm more than happy to chat with you. Today we will be talking about building an online network of peers. And my guest today is Chris Bongers. Chris is a digital nomad and the author of DailyDevTips.com, who currently works as a senior full-stack developer at Everywhere I Am. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up building a network of peers online yourself?
Sure. A little bit about myself. I've been a software developer for most of my life. I've done a lot of schooling on this topic, so I don't have your normal IT background, but I have a background in IT media design, which is like a bridging school between IT and design communication. And I've done 7.5 years of that in total for 2 different degrees. And ever since then, I've actually started working. I was already working for a company in my last school years. And ever since, I've just been working as a developer in a pretty wide variety of the world. So I've worked as a front-end developer, but also as a full-stack, as a pure back-end developer, as an iOS developer. So I've touched multiple parts of the spectrum. Yeah, it was cool that you reached out to me for this topic, since especially now with, you know, the corona situation, online networks just becoming more and more important. And especially if you want to keep learning and growing as a developer, it's just so important to have a good network of peers.
Yeah. So you've traveled around the world a little bit. So how do you feel that it has affected your need for having relationships online?
That's a good question. I mean, it's so much different having a company that you can visit, for instance. I was recently at my company in the Netherlands for 2 days, and it's so much, yeah, such a variety of things that you can discuss with your teammates and people around you that you actually don't do as much on like Discord or whatever your company might use. So I do feel like working as a remote worker puts you at a disadvantage over the people in the office at some stage.
Yeah, I think if we talk about the office life and companies having different remote working cultures, the common terms I hear people using are remote first. So you have companies where everything basically happens remotely and all the information is available remotely. And then you have remote friendly companies where you can work remotely, but you might be left out of some information. And I think especially now that everybody is hoping to see the pandemic end, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of changes in terms of remote work are going to happen in a lot of the companies, because now everyone has had to be outside of the office, so no one has been at disadvantage in that sense. Now that people start working at the office again, the discussions start to happen at the office. So it's very interesting to see what happens. I actually work remotely at least 4 days a week in my current work. I have a 1.5 to 2 hours commute. So even after the pandemic, I won't be hanging around at the office every day, because it would be like 11, 12 hours workday. So that's definitely an interesting thing to see. From my perspective, how I started to feel that I need a network of peers outside my work and specifically online came down to the fact that I used to work at a consultancy with around 350 pretty skilled developers. And when I was less senior, it was easy to feel that all the help you needed was available in the company Slack. We had, you know, channels for all technological things, hashtag JavaScript, even TypeScript, web development, Java, you know, all sorts of, even Apple crap, which was a channel for being pissed off about when your Apple stuff that cost a lot didn't work properly. So you know, and once I got more senior, the questions that I had became more, you know, more senior. So they became harder. And not everyone was able to answer. Not every one of the 350 developers was a front-end developer. And so I started feeling that I need to find people even outside the company. And year after year, I got more active on Twitter. But my personal turning point was last fall, I started working in a SaaS product company called Supermetrics. And we have around 10 front-end developers. But, you know, that's not the same thing as 350 developers. We have like combined, I think, 40 to 50 developers now. But I lost that large network of 350 developers. And although I have, you know, awesome colleagues, actually some of them have been guests in this podcast, James and Sergey, still there's only so much expertise that a small group of people can have. So how about you? Where have you found your peers, or how do you get the most value from being online?
That's a very good point. I haven't been as fortunate to have worked for a company that size. But that also gave me an advantage at finding peers at an early stage. I even worked at a company where I was the only developer working on an Ionic application. And yeah, it sucked if you got stuck on an issue. You're like, okay, well, I don't have anyone to ask what to do next. You know, Stack Overflow doesn't have stuff on it. Now what? And yeah, I think actually some of my most valuable connections online actually come from GitHub, believe it or not, where you would ask questions in the repository of the framework you're working on or the tool you're using. And yeah, I made some friends there. And you just start chatting to these people on Discord or Slack. And you just build like a proper connection. And up until this day, some of these guys I'm still in contact with, and they still help me a lot in the field of technical queries. But also, you know, it's good to reflect at people that are on a similar path as you. Like, okay, well, what kind is the next goal? As you may know, that's also very important as a developer. Like, you know, getting help on certain topics is cool and much needed, but there's also like a career path and that kind of discussions that is very hard to do with someone that is, you know, junior versus senior. You're kind of like busy with different things in your life.
And there's actually a lot of value being able to discuss your career also outside your workplace, because you know, I have a few friends who I've, you know, met online or made connections somewhere else in the past, and now we don't work at the same place or we don't live close to one another. But I call them, like I have like recurring half hour calls. I go outside and I walk for a half an hour in the middle of the day and we have a call, like having coffee, but remotely. There's a lot of freedom when you're speaking with someone who doesn't work with the same people. Maybe he comes from a different work culture or comes from a different company career path or, you know, all sorts of stuff that gives you this sort of freedom that, okay, this person is able to give me advice that does not reflect my company 100%. So I'm able to speak a lot of stuff that might be not as easy with my coworkers, because if I start, you know, talk about things happening at work, my coworkers might have strong opinions on them and stuff like that. So I totally agree that having people with whom you can think about your career, reflect on things like salary, career path, how does your company take care of you? How does the company where you're working, what's the career path there? So all this sort of reflection, it adds to what you have. And actually, I had a guest a few episodes ago who was an open source developer. And when you said that you found friends in GitHub, a light bulb went on top of my head. It makes a lot of sense because that's the place where you're a peer or at least a colleague, if you know, start contributing. And it's not that you're always taking, but if you contribute stuff and if you're not just putting a thumb up and asking like ping pong, why is this issue not fixed? But if you actually try to be a good human being on GitHub and contribute, that can lead to good peer relationships where people feel that you respect them and they can contribute to your life.
Yeah, that's a very valid point, and also one of the strong suits of having friends like that, because it's one topic if you, for instance, have a very specific question, right? So you're working on something and you just like don't know what's the best approach to go about it, or you're just stuck on a technical issue, to have people that you can ask these things from. But it's also maybe even more valuable to have something that you, for instance, made. And this is another example where I only have a few of these friends in my network that I can just share some stuff I made with, right? And this stuff might technically be working, but they will be very harsh on me and say like, well, you know, kind of what you did here, that may not be the best approach, because they work in different companies where they have massive reviews on their code. So they learn from people. And especially if you work in companies that have little to no other people, code reviews is very hard. So all your code will be valid because you do self reviews, or, you know, the people reviewing you are on the same level. So I think that's where some of my valuable peers come in handy, that will actually be very blunt with you and say like, well, this code is working, but you could do this or that to make it even better. And follow these standards that you may not know about.
Yeah, that's, you know, I feel a lot of joy when I hear you saying that, because in my previous company, it was a consultancy, and that people were very proud about doing things right. And one thing that it taught me was that when we go to code review, you need to be prepared in a good sense, because there was this professional culture that code review is about the content and not about the person. The goal was to learn and to teach each other. It wasn't, you know, just looks good to me and let's go, but it was about trying to improve architecture, trying to improve the way people think, trying to communicate architectural ideas on why a solution is good or bad. It wasn't about, you know, this sucks. That wasn't the comment. It was about, you know, you could improve this because XYZ. And that has taught me a lot as a developer. And it is something that I love to do when I do my own code reviews. I have suggestions and I mark them as suggestions. So this might not be something that you need to fix, but I think that this could be done better in this way, or this is hard to read. So give this sort of feedback. And you're correct. I have the same feeling that it can be sometimes really hard to get this sort of like very good feedback on your code. And it depends on the company, like what the culture around code reviews are. Do people invest time in them, or are they, you know, like just a rubber stamp and go? I feel that that's a very good point. If you can find people who can look at your code and say what they feel about it without feeling scared that they make you feel hurt or something, that you're able to get feedback from them that is direct and you respect them in the sense that you know that they're not trying to be mean, they're not assholes, but they're, you know, genuinely, they care about you professionally and they want to help you go forward.
Yeah, that makes full sense. I mean, that makes it so powerful as well. Even from my blogging perspective, the blogs sometimes have stupid mistakes, even though they're like basic topics, right? But sometimes I type the code without like validating them in the browser or in a tool. And then there's always two kinds of people. There's people that are very harsh about that, like, oh, your code doesn't work, it sucks. Or you have people like saying like, oh, you missed this and this, because they know you just missed it, you know, for some reason. And that means a lot to me if people do that. Sometimes they even come with a whole backstory of why something is better or worse, which is so valuable. That's the only way you learn and grow as a person as well.
Yeah, I think we could talk about a little bit about the difference of a peer having an audience and then, you know, following a thought leader or something. I think a lot of people just consume content on Twitter, YouTube, Reddit, and so on without maybe engaging all that much. And it can be very useful if the content that you find works well for your current situation. And that's how I used Twitter for many years. And then there's kind of the other end of the spectrum, where people are trying to build an audience. So you're trying to find people who are interested in your expertise or content and they want to follow you. That can be very valuable if you want to be a content creator or want to have a big impact on the world or whatever you feel that you want the audience for. But it's a lot of hard work and I don't think it's for most of the people. And I think for most developers, the sweet spot is in the middle, especially when you go further in your career and if you specialize. Because when you find something in the middle, which I'll call peers, so people who you just don't follow or people that just don't follow you, but people with whom you have discussions, people who sometimes you learn from and sometime you teach. Those sort of relationships, like from my perspective, have the best return of invest. So the most value for the time that you put in. And also, if you genuinely want to connect with people, you'll end up having actual friends. So not just professional colleagues. So these sort of connections that last even if you switch jobs. And in the best scenario, you both choose the same career path and can grow together. Sometimes you go to different ways and you can still learn from one another, but maybe not, you know, so intensely. But nevertheless, you can have someone in the world that you know is a good person and you want to be connected to. So are there some things that you feel that you learned from your online peers that you've might not have learned otherwise?
Yeah, there's actually quite a lot of things. So I think there's a massive part, which is actually about soft skills that I only learned from online peers. I think it has to do with something you touched on in the beginning, right? You said like colleagues might not openly discuss like work environment, right? So you might not want to state at work like, I'm actually not feeling too happy, I'm stressed out, or, you know, the workload is too much, I don't know if I can do this thing. Where if that's something, you know, happily to discuss online with some of the people I talk with, and they look at it from a neutral perspective. So I think that's one very powerful aspect of online peers, and also the fact that they can help you to deal with failure, right? Because, you know, let's say you screwed something up at work, then it's very hard to discuss that with your manager or your direct colleagues. You know, you kind of just go like, well, yeah, I made a mistake and that's fine. But inside you might feel shit about it. And, you know, then who are you going to talk to that about? You know, you might tell your family and friends, but they might not even understand the topic at hand. So it's very hard to get rid of that issue and frustration you have in your head, and it keeps on grinding and grinding. At least I find in my experience. So for me, that's a very good valve to let some steam off at someone who understands the topic and understands the frustration you're going through, and just says like, well, yeah, that happened to me as well, and this is how you get on with it.
Yeah, I can totally relate. There are like different kinds of work cultures. I've always had a good manager, and I've made sure that I have mentors. If the company where I worked didn't have a mentorship program, I just found someone and told him that let's go out on a lunch every 2 weeks or go out for a walk and sort of dealing with failure. We actually did an episode, I think it's the episode number 6 with Jamon Holmgren on a thing called sisu, which is a Finnish term for dealing with adversity. And in that episode, we discussed a lot about the fact that the work of a developer has its, you know, own sort of adversities, and you have to deal with quite a bit of failure. You have to deal with debugging. Things break, if not all the time, then quite often when you don't expect, like all sorts of things that are very hard to explain to someone who doesn't do the same work. They can't go like, oh, I understand. And you have this feeling of mutual sharing. So I can 100% relate to dealing with failure, imposter syndrome. And that's a term that I learned from Twitter, you know, and then I started realizing that that's how I feel. So this sort of dealing with the emotional stuff that goes with this work is something that, yeah, peers have been helpful to me also.
Another good example, I think, is stuff that you don't necessarily use, right? So for me, that's two main things. It's like CI/CD pipelines. Obviously, it's like a big thing, and it looks like every company does that, but on paper, they don't. Like, yeah, big companies will, and cool startups will, but your everyday firm won't invest in that because it costs money and doesn't return right away. So it's, for me, that was always something I was very interested in, and I could never find a company that I could actively start doing that unless I spent a lot of my personal free spare time in these projects. Until this, the latest company I joined, so Everywhere I Am, we quite recently started doing it on some tips that I gave and another colleague that we both were very interested in. It would benefit in the long term, but that's where a network of peers also helped to guide you in like, okay, how do you sell this to a company? How do you even go about it? Like, where do you start if you know nothing about this? You know, you have read something about it, but how does it actually work? What does it entail? How much time is it going to cost? You know, that is stuff you don't really find in a tutorial about that or a book. So, you know, you have to learn these things from people that actually done that at that level for that kind of project. So CI/CD was one. And another tech topic would be test-driven development, which, you know, it's also one of these things. Either the company already does it or it's never going to happen. Like,
yeah. TDD is something that people have strong opinions on. And there are companies that are like, this is the way. And then there are companies that do something else. But I totally agree with this thought that when you have to sell something to the company where you're putting your professional reputation in play, in a sense, you need to be feeling yourself very strongly that this is what we need to do. Being able to reflect your own project that you have at hand with someone who has had something similar in their hands, been doing something that is very close to that, really helps you start feeling that, okay, we should really be doing that. And there are benefits that outweigh the cost. And I think like code quality in general is like a topic that is very hard to measure in a lot of smaller companies. Like if you go to the very, very big companies, then they can probably start, you know, doing some sort of research and they can, you know, get out some percentages that those teams that do TDD perform X percent or better or worse. I don't know. But, you know, in any case, like in smaller companies, you don't have these ways of measuring success in a sense. So it's a lot about the intuition of the individual developer. And if you haven't had the possibility of doing it beforehand, like before in your career, then you need to rely on the intuition of other people. They may be more senior than you, but they hopefully are in the same context and can say that, yes, if I were you, I would 100% have an automated pipeline. And, you know, having worked without one and with one, there's no going back once you, you know, taste the goodness of automation. We actually discussed this with my peer James, or my colleague and my peer James, in the episode number 2. It's a sweet, sweet, sweet thing when you can automate things. One thing for me, in addition to all those things that you said, is also this sort of very small tips. The world is full of resources. It's too full of resources. And there's literally millions of people trying to grab your attention. They want to sell you something. And it can be really hard to know what books are actually good, what courses are good, what libraries are good. For example, one thing that I picked up that I wouldn't have picked up without my online peers is the book called Effective TypeScript. It was recommended genuinely by a few different people on Twitter that I had followed and interacted with. So from that, I got the push that I really should buy the book. And it's really good. So 100%, if you're learning TypeScript, that's my favorite. But then another thing, like going back to the soft skills, learning about diversity, depending on the company where you are, it might be diverse or it might not. And you can live in a very nice bubble and not understand the world that surrounds you. And having people from different cultures around the world really opens up you, like a lot of things that are going on, and help you understand, like they help you understand yourself more. Because when you meet someone who's different, then you know yourself how you are different from them. So that's a good mirror for everyone. Then there's the big question, at least from my perspective, because this was at least for me hard in the beginning. How did you find and connect with peers? Online or offline?
Interesting question. Obviously, offline, before COVID, there's actually a lot of events, like tech-related events, because you would have people interested in the same topics and you saw chats with a lot of people, but within these people, you find those, you know, one or two people that are on the kind of same level and page you are. And yeah, you know, you become friends with and keep in touch, and every now and then you have a chat and whatnot. So yeah, that used to be my way of doing that before. And I used to attend a lot of meetups because those are very specific topics often. So, you know, back in the day, I used to go to a Laravel meetup. Because, you know, if you're into Laravel, that's very useful. And you can see up front, like, are they going to discuss this topic? So you're going to know those people are very similar level of knowledge about Laravel. So it's a very good way to find people, you know, that you can connect with and help you grow, and you can help them grow. Yeah, that was for the offline part. For online, like I said before, GitHub has been very helpful, and especially like you mentioned, if you are contributing, that's a super good way to get in touch with people, and they appreciate it, you appreciate it, you learn something, and you go on. Another way, of course, is Twitter, although I find it pretty hard to find people with that are on the same page. Like you said, someone might tell you, I'm a full stack developer. Like I told you, it literally doesn't tell you anything. Like I could be a Python developer and you could be a PHP developer. Yeah, we literally can't discuss anything because we wouldn't understand each other. So in that case, it's very hard to find people. And even if you would say, oh, we're both PHP developers, or we're both JavaScript developers, you know, it ends up you being using React, I'm using Angular. Like, yeah, that, you can't compare that. So I find it very hard to find people that are actually like super helpful. I do have a couple friends I met through Twitter, and I had the fortune to meet them offline as well for a drink, which is cool. So those are mainly the reasons, the factors I find the peers and connected with.
Yeah, I agree that Twitter is not, it's not very easy to find peers that, people who are close to the situation where you are professionally or in life in general. But that's probably the reason why I'm also very interested in the people who I find that are very close to where I am, because every now and then you find someone who writes a blog post and you feel that, you know, that is me, or at least very close to me, or that relates to me. Or every now and then someone makes a comment to a tweet, or they tweet out something that is really like in your headspace. And I try to really remember those people and engage with them. A lot of them are from smaller accounts, like not thousands of followers. And those are actually the people you probably are most likely to have a peer relationship with. Once people have a lot of followers, it becomes very different, like difficult for them to have the time to interact with you. I do agree that meeting people offline casually in events, like that's easier, especially if it's a recurring event where you see the people like over and over again and slowly kind of form a relationship. But I feel that the best way to simulate that on Twitter is to, you know, do the same thing, comment on people's tweets and spend time on interacting with their content or somehow connecting with them. And I think the only reason I do that is that because I've started to feel that those are super valuable, like the relationships that I can build. And also the fact that for some reason before, I would feel that the relationships that I find with peers online aren't as real as those that you make in real life, which is in a way a stupid thought, but that's how I used to think. But then once I have found a few peers that I really feel that, you know, I haven't even ever met them, but I feel that I can interact with them and learn from them, and I kind of live my life together in the Twitter sphere with them. Not every day, maybe once a week, every now and then, but I know what's up in their life, then what's up in my life. That changed my perspective in that sense that I feel that those relationships are very valuable. I feel that they are more and more valuable for me going forward in life. And those are the sort of relationships that, to be honest, I don't think I could form where I live now. Like I live in the rural side of Finland, where the closest, you know, if I would say that I would like to go to a Laravel meetup, there's probably two in the country. And it's like an hour's or one and a like hour and a half drive away. Or if I would like to go to a React meetup, even after the pandemic is over, there's probably one or two options for me. And it's going to be always like a 5 hours investment. So it's not very easy to do that. So when I work remotely from the countryside, I get the most value by having people who can, you know, it's easy to interact with almost every day.
No, for sure. And I agree, because it broadens your horizon. Like literally now have some peers online. Also haven't met those people, but you know, they're from Germany and the ones from India, and there's no way you would ever meet them if it wasn't for online. But as you know, it's very hard to find like a peer that can help you or would identify the peer. So this just broadens your horizon. So it's just so valuable to make like proper connections and keep them, you know, uphold.
Yeah, I think one place where you can find peers is online communities that are specifically for a topic. I actually found you from the blogging for devs community. So there's like a ton of different communities online And I think some of them may be worthwhile to invest and find peers in. I've participated in some where, you know, I haven't felt that those are for me. But then sometimes you find places where the community is good, and that's also worth investigating and spending some time on. For example, my last guest, Erik Rasmussen, who is the author of Redux Form and Final Form, talked quite a bit about reactive flux. I think it was a Slack group around React Redux when it was first founded, especially in the beginning. It still exists, but like he referred to those discussions a lot. So that was a community built around the technology, but there was a lot of different discussions going on there. So it can be a technology group where you find peers and then you start having different discussions.
Yeah, that's very true. Just even on that topic, if you have, for instance, the blogging for devs is a good example, because actually two of my current peers I met through there. So even though it's a blogging community, they actually both technical people, and I speak to them 3 times a week, you know, just a quick what's going on, and sometimes a little bit more in depth, you know, at a time a bit more personal, whatever. So yeah, I think those communities are very valuable if you're also willing to invest the time and effort in it.
Exactly. Then the last question for today, and this is no longer about finding peers or building a network of peers online, but this is about what resources would you recommend to a front-end developer who wants to go from good to great? So books, YouTube channels, people to follow, groups on the internet, whatever. Like, what are the resources that you would recommend that you feel that would help a person go from good to great as a front-end developer?
I do think a good place to start is Oktoberfest, weird enough. That's one thing that, you know, the GitHub, whatever, October hackathon month, where you can participate in open source, and there's a lot of issues going on. And it's not just limited to that month. It's actually always ongoing. But it's a good way because you're not alone in that. The same goes for hackathons. Obviously, a lot of platforms these days offer hackathons. And the great part about that is also, again, you're not alone. You can start a team. You can find a team on Twitter or on a community that can help you. Another thing that I would recommend is interacting with content. So not just consuming it, but interacting with it. And that can be basically anywhere. I mean, yeah, I get my content from daily.dev, from Twitter, from Dev2, Hashnode, Medium, doesn't really matter. Any topic that you think like, okay, that can help me, just read it, but interact with it, you know, try it out, give feedback, you know, say to the author, oh, why is that? If you're not certain about something, right, then Free Code Camp would be a good resource since it has a clear path. Right, I think that's what makes it so good. And then there's also the blah 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 project, the Odin project. Sorry, that's the one. Which actually a recent friend of mine, he followed that. So he didn't have a tech background, and I must say, he came from nothing, and I was surprised what he could do after just doing the Odin project, following that. So I think that's a really good starting point for people. With all this, I understand people might be a little bit like, oh, that's a lot to do. And that's the thing with being a developer. The thing you mustn't forget is that it never stops. I've been a developer for a long time, like 16 years now, and you're still learning every day because the technologies are evolving. So yeah, always keep on learning and reading and trying out new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually pretty funny because when I first, you know, decided to ask this question at the end of every episode, I thought that, you know, for some reason, I thought that people would recommend a lot of books and a lot of people to follow or whatever. But I think most people in this podcast have recommended like that you should, instead of consuming, you should, you know, start doing something. So I think that's a recurring theme. And I think there is a reason why people who enjoy being developers or, you know, who are the experts in their field, like Eric or Mark Dalglish, you know, they've built something and they've learned their craft by doing so. So those are good, very good tips. Thank you. Thank you, Chris, for joining me. And thanks to all our listeners. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks.